You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Mina Hassan. Mina, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Mina, we're talking about your work today, a few shows, but we're talking about Deanna Evans' projects and your piece in the current group show. This is, I want to kind of jump right into talking about that piece, but maybe we should just step back a little bit and talk about your practice in general. We're about to talk about that work there and also one in that was in Dumbo in the past. But let's just talk about how you're approaching these works, because they often seem to be complex narratives, but there's a lot going on here. Do you want to tell me a little bit about just your approach to these works, your practice?
Of course, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and always great to have the opportunity to put language to the work in different contexts. You're my first podcast, so I'm really excited. The work generally, like its most basic sense, is a kind of a tool for me to kind of situate myself, find a sense of belonging, both in time, in like a historical sense, as well as in place, in a geographical sense, and to kind of connect my inner and outer worlds, like many artists do. And I'm like really invested in cultural heritage, and its politics and aesthetics, and I've been building a kind of deep inventory of personal and historical objects, in particular textiles, that I've either lived with, come from my own familial history, or those that I've encountered online or that I've seen in different kinds of institutional spaces, especially museum spaces. And I'm often like making my own kinds of iterations of these objects that I'm studying. And as I study them, I'm kind of learning their histories, learning how they originated and where they came from. And in that way, I'm able to kind of teach myself about my own history. My family's from Bangladesh, so I never really was taught properly either American or South Asian history. So the practice is very much like a tool, by studying these different objects, a tool for learning these different kinds of geopolitical conditions by way of understanding cultural influences through like aesthetic conversations.
So you're in a sense you're relearning, you're reteaching yourself things about your past that might have been the kind of things that typically your parents or local community would teach you, but you weren't
exactly
taught these things. So this is the research portion of your
exactly
practice.
Exactly. My parents moved here in the late 70s, following LBJ's Immigration Act. So we were very much, fresh American immigrants, and embraced the often fish brainy quality of American culture, and very much were engaged in ideas of assimilation early on. And then I was also a freshman in high school when 9/11 happened. And my family's from Bangladesh, which has, undergone like two different independence revolutions in the last 35, 40 years. So the histories that I come from are in flux and complicated. Kind of keeping up with them and following along with these changing narratives and using the practice as a means to kind of witness and metabolize and understand start to understand where I come from is such a gift of, such a gift in terms of what it means to be an artist. Yeah.
Yeah, right. To embrace family that way and forge those connections. So we're talking about a few works, but let's talk about the one in the show that's opening now. This is a paper piece we're looking at, right? This is part of a group show, Interstitial, that's running through August 27th of 2026. Let's talk about this work that you have. It kind of shimmers and has a quality of almost royalty to it, it looks like. But tell me a little bit about this piece. This is a paperwork, correct?
It's a paperwork. Yes, I work on Japanese printmaking papers, so they're really, really durable, but also, have the kind of thin translucency of paper. It's my favorite surface by far. And I'm kind of like scratching ink into them initially using a metal disc pen that then gets coated with clear acrylic mediums, kind of akin to the way wax is used in batik textile methodologies. And then the whole piece goes through many, many levels of pores and washes and stains. So the paper ends up being this container and support for a lot of acrylic and comes out on the other end with this kind of leathery skin-like effect. So this piece follows that line of process, but a new thing that I'm really starting to dig into with this one is cutting into the surface as well. So it has a bunch of pieces cut out from the center of it, and is like a means to kind of capture and circulate light inside of it. I'm really excited. This is brand new. I just finished it like 5 days ago, so I'm still kind of learning how to talk about it. But it's based on a textile that I believe is a North African textile that I saw when I was visiting the Matisse Museum in Nice last summer. And it was a textile that he had in his own studio and was the backdrop of many of his paintings, including this, I think, 1926 painting titled Seated Odalisque of this woman kind of sitting in front of the textile. The textile itself really resonated with me when I saw it. It reminded me of the different kinds of window screens that I kind of grew up around. It's kind of like a early technology the kind of window screen function also exists in like wooden and stone iterations too, and they're meant to kind of circulate air. It's like a pre-air conditioner air conditioner. And it also acts as like a double-sided mirror. So when you're inside looking out, you can see the outside really easily, but it's harder to kind of discern the inside. So I'm really interested in the way it deals with ideas of privacy, exposure, vulnerability, and light. This piece is a iteration. I think of all of my pieces as iteration, so they're very much their own thing. it's an iteration of this Matisse textile. So it's one half of the textile drawn in the perspective of the photograph that I took of it in the museum. And then I did traces of my own body on top of the surface, mimicking the posture and position of the odalisque female figure in the Matisse painting. It's a hallucinatory work for sure. There's a lot that's like conjured through the color and the posture and everything.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, let's talk more about this. So this is really your it's your universe in a sense, right? I mean, you're in this, so there's something else. There's a number of things happening here, but it also seems in a sense very very personal, the reference, the homage, so to speak, but also the fact that it's a self-portrait in some ways, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes, certainly. I mean, I think autobiography exists in all artworks for most artists. I definitely indulge the self-portraiture aspect of work when it arrives. I don't shy away from it. This one, because it was connected to a personal experience of seeing the piece, I very much leaned into that. I was thinking about like Marisol's body traces and Kiki Kolganik's body traces. So it was kind of, I'm excited to be able to build references to pop art into my process now. It's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. And the body traces are becoming a means towards that. They're also literally just like a projection of my body into this material history, kind of like literally performing the act of seeing myself in the histories that I'm studying.
Right. It's such a fascinating process, really, that kind of mining the past, because in some ways it's almost like reparenting yourself or something, right? You're coming close to your family in a way that's that's almost more intimate than the way they raise you. I mean, maybe I'm going too far out on that, but right, there's something here that's really intimate, that's also rebuilding something for you that, because of maybe the idea of just coming to America and wanting to just perhaps assimilate, was the opposite of what your parents were doing, right? Potentially.
Totally. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's complicated. it's a constant fluctuating thing, and it's really fantastic to have the practice as a kind of like steady compass for myself. Yeah.
So this work is really like a one of the. I mean, this is a kind of very special and standout work in the show. But there was also another work that I want to talk to, and perhaps in relation to this, it was the one at in Dumbo on.
Yeah.
That so, let's talk about that one a little bit, because this was another work that's quite a bit different. This one is really quite a bit more figurative, really, right? We have I mean, the one we just talked about, of course, is, but that one has scenes that are very specifically with this tiger and more. Can you tell me a little bit about this one?
Sure. Yeah. Last year was a really, really fun year for me. I'm a born and raised New Yorker. So that's maybe the identity term I feel the most confident and comfortable with. So I was invited by a historian and the director of museums and programming at the Prospect Parks Alliance, Dylan Yeats, to do a site-specific installation at this space called the Old Stone House in Park Slope. And this exhibition with Dan Evans at Main Window in Dumbo was a partner exhibition to that. So I felt really fortunate to have these two exhibitions across Brooklyn that were dealing specifically with the history of the American Revolution in Brooklyn in a way that contextualized it in a global sense. So directly connecting the revolutionary efforts here in America and in New York specifically with those in South Asia, specifically Southern India. So the whole practice was, the whole project was looking at the fact that the general who lost the American Revolution here, General Cornwallis, had fought the Battle of Brooklyn at the site of the Old Stone House. And then upon losing here, he went to India and defeated the Sultan named Tipu, who was a notorious anti-colonial kind of revolutionary figure, also, you know, a problematic ruler in his own right. but he really, like, put up a big fight against the British and was an avid art lover and developed all of these kinds of, like, aesthetic, cultural kinds of symbols around his efforts. In order to, like, strengthen and mythologize himself, basically, and a major part of that was the tiger. So everything he had was, like, adorned with tiger stripes, and I was making works based on all the different objects that he had kind of commissioned, including his throne, which is covered in tiger finial heads, his bedchamber sword that had, like, tiger stripes engraved on it, and his tent, which is like a chintz kind of floral pattern. And he also really famously commissioned this musical instrument, this wooden organ, that's an animatronic thing. It's life size of a tiger pouncing on a British colonial soldier, and it lives in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, and it's on display, and it's one of the museum's, like, great prized possessions. So there in London and England, it has a kind of, like, pop sensibility. Everyone's kind of familiar with the object. So Indiana invited me to do the project at Main Window. I was super excited to have this, like, highly visible street-facing window space to work with and to kind of, like, play with this museum display idea, but also, like, deal with the site of it being at the base of the Brooklyn Bridge, which was historically, like, a revolutionary space for battles. So yeah, the window piece is, like, a life-size iteration of this tiger organ When you play it, actually, it plays the sounds of a soldier wailing. And it's surrounded by a proscenium of different paper iterations that borrow Americana imagery from Florian Stettheimer paintings, actually, especially the Cathedral of Art painting. So I borrowed some of her like festival imagery, as well as the fascist eagle that's at the top right-hand corner of that painting. The thing about the tiger symbolism that I find really interesting is that Tipu kind of used the tiger to kind of build strength and notoriety around his figure and to, win many battles against the British. It was a source of power for him. And upon his defeats, the British kind of like took it and it became a symbol of their power of dominion over the region. So I'm really interested in how these different symbols kind of shift in terms of like the power structures that they're speaking to and the different kinds of hierarchies that they construct. And my piece is maybe like a somewhat erotic iteration of this tiger piece.
So let's talk about the erotic iteration. Yeah, tell me more, because that's exciting. And it's such a complex character, and the whole animatronics thing, that's kind of amazing object and idea, and so
right.
Curious.
It's based off of a true story, actually. I think a British soldier was actually attacked and killed by a tiger. So Tipu was like sourcing it in reality.
Something to celebrate.
Exactly.
it's so amazing. So tell me more about the erotic aspects of this, because that's adding something also.
Yeah, I mean,
different.
It's something, the work's always, my work's always engaged with erotics, intuitively, I guess, in terms of like thinking about power dynamics and power struggles. I land in the space of erotics and interpersonal relationships as a way to speak to the complexity of it. So my tiger and soldier appear, you know, as much in play, in they're like caressing each other, maybe making out a little bit, as much as they are attacking and mauling each other. There's a lot of ambiguity in terms of the relationship between the two in my piece, which I hope reflects the kind of ambiguity and complexity of the historical narrative that I'm looking at. Yeah,
it does. It does, you know, and but the stories you're telling there also associated with it are just fascinating, right? Because colonialism and all these different aspects like that, building of the animatronics thing, and of course, right, usually a character like him is very problematic. I mean, all these kind of heroic types or not are flawed, right? We're all flawed characters.
Exactly.
But that also animatronics object sounds kind of wowing, right? It's one of these different way of experiencing, I guess, art then, or I'm not sure exactly how those things were used,
exactly.
But I imagine it must have been pretty inspiring or something, right? It was
exactly
kind of a revolutionary, I don't know what you'd call it, but something that's designed to kind of influence people, right, and give them a certain feeling, almost like
exactly.
like a circus coming to town, I guess. I really don't know how that
exactly. It was really fun. I would like sit across the street for like hours and just watch people engage the piece in Dumbo, and it was so fun. People would like act out the scene. There was a lot of tiger roaring. Kids loved it. So it really felt like the piece kind of came to life through viewership, which generally is like something I'm really interested. I'm interested in the use value of an art object, and I like making paintings that kind of are on the edge of what a painting can be, and definitely tapping into ideas of sculpture, textile drawing, printmaking in a way that activates it in space, hopefully. So my paintings, like the one in the group show that's opening tonight, it's a two-sided painting that's free-hanging in the space, and I think of them as like site-sensitive. So wherever they end up, they kind of have their own existence and life and subjectivity that's very dependent on the space that it's inhabiting. and it's exists in like a pedestrian space. So as viewers are kind of moving around the piece, I hope to make work that is as much about the physicality and materiality of the piece itself as you're viewing it, as much as it is about your own kind of imaginative response to the work and the kind of like history that a viewer is bringing to the work as well, that it can both be exist in mind as well as in like physical space is something super important to me.
I like that. Right. That's how it functions as sculpture as well. Really, what you were saying, some of the references to sculpture, because this is has a sculptural presence, as you said, in the group show that's opening tonight and running through the, just to be clear, the 27th of August, that takes up a physical space. So you talked about kind of a viewer almost completing the work, right? That there's something
exactly.
really important about that engagement, that the literal space the work is taking up.
Exactly. I love a two-sided painting because you can't ever actually see the whole thing at once. You know, you kind of have to like remember one side as you're looking at the other side, and it becomes so much about your experience with the thing in real time, you know, rather than just a kind of like singular image. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Mina, I wish you well with this show. I hope people can come to see it. That's really exciting. Opening tonight and running through the 27th. I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I just, like, last night finished, finally, a love story, the biography on James Baldwin that Nicholas Boggs wrote. It came out, I think, late last year. It's like 650 pages long, of course, because Baldwin had a robust love life. But it's looking at his career and his writings and texts kind of as they were like influenced and informed by the relationships he was engaging with and the way he was navigating his sexuality and romantic life and desires. It, you know, is like a huge source of motivation for him and really, really shaped what he was writing at the time. Giovanni's Room is like one of the first texts that I read as a young person that really shaped my relationship to art making and imagery. So it was really meaningful to kind of recontextualize his practice by looking at his romantic relationships, which I really hadn't known very much about before. I highly recommend it. It's very long, but it also kind of reads like a trashy romance novel, so it's like extremely enjoyable. Yeah.
It's a page turner. I mean, it's a page turner
exactly,
as well.
Exactly. He spent a lot of time in Istanbul also, which I hadn't known. So the way he talks about Istanbul as this like cosmopolitan space that's at the end of empire, the way he kind of like understood the legacies of empire was just like really, really helpful for me in terms of how it was reflected in his like personal life.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that does sound so fascinating. And I want to wish you well on the show tonight and the run of the show, Mina, and thank you so much for spending time with me today. I really appreciate your time and work.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.